Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much, Regina. And I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop, Liver Cancer Treatment Update. Such an important program that we're offering today. I know many of you have really wanted us to offer this program more frequently. And today's program is supported by ICEYE, Inc., I really want to thank them for their support of today's program. Now, before I introduce our first speaker, I want to say a few words about just who's on the call. So we have over 100 participants on this program today, and you come from all over the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. And we also have international participants today from Canada, the Philippines, Romania, South Africa, and the United Kingdom. So it is a global call as well, and it's a credit to each of you that you've chosen to spend this next hour with us. And now it is my great pleasure to introduce our first speaker, and our first speaker is Dr. Sun-Yung Lee, and Dr. Lee is Assistant Professor, Department of Gastrointestinal GI Medical Oncology, Division of Cancer Medicine, University of Texas, MD Anderson Cancer Center. And Dr. Lee will be addressing an overview of liver cancer, including current standard of care, new treatment approaches, updates on clinical trials, and the role of radioembolization. It is my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Lee.
Thank you so much. My name is Sun-Yung Lee, a GI medical oncologist at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, Texas. So I'm going to discuss the overview of liver cancer treatment, including standard of care and new treatment approaches. There are rare types of liver cancer, such as fibrolamellar liver cancer or fibrolamellar-like liver cancer, typically found in younger patients. But our focus will be on liver cancer arising as a consequence of liver damage today. Before we dive into liver cancer and its treatment, we need to learn why we get liver cancer. In most cases, liver cancer, known as hepatocellular carcinoma or HCC, results from liver damage. Several factors can cause liver damage called liver cirrhosis with three primary causes. Number one, metabolic syndrome, including diabetes, high cholesterol, and obesity. Number two, virus infections, such as hepatitis B or hepatitis C viruses, and number three, drinking alcohol. These risk factors induce chronic inflammation and damage, fat deposition in the liver, and eventually lead to liver cirrhosis, causing scar tissues building up in the liver tissue. Scar tissues from liver cirrhosis are basically not normal, and can transform into cancer anytime. When tumors are detected in the liver, our primary goal is to eradicate those tumors. But since liver cancer originates from underlying liver risk factors and the liver cirrhosis, it is crucial to manage these risk factors to prevent recurrence. Liver cancer treatment is complex and typically requires multidisciplinary approaches involving medical, surgical, radiation oncologist, interventional radiologist, and liver transplant team. The treatment strategy for liver cancer depends on the patient's liver health. They should be able to handle liver cancer treatment, the number, location, size, and distribution of tumors. For localized tumors, surgery could be considered if the underlying liver tissue is healthy. If surgery is not possible due to advanced liver cirrhosis, for small localized tumors, typically less than 3 centimeters, an ablation technique like a microwave ablation is preferred. This involves inserting a needle directly into the tumor and applying high-energy heat to destroy the tumor. If tumors are still localized but not suitable for ablation due to its location near essential blood vessels, or tumors are larger than what ablation could cover, embolization could be considered. An interventional radiologist identifies specific blood vessels feeding the tumor through angiogram and blocks them using microspheres or microbeads, which are coated with a radiation material called yttrium-90 or Y90, and it is called Y90 radioembolization, or sometimes chemotherapy drugs, and then it is called chemoembolization or transarterial chemoembolization. People say TACE or TACE. This deprives the tumor of its blood supply and it delivers radiation or chemo material directly into the tumor and kill cancer cells. If tumors are located in challenging locations, or if above techniques are not feasible for localized disease for whatever reason, or if tumors have extended beyond the liver, then external beam radiation, simply radiation therapy, is given by radiation oncologist. More centers are incorporating novel techniques such as histotripsy or pulsed electric field or PES ablation, while data are not still matured. Once again, liver cancer comes from underlying liver damage that is already done. And even when tumors are eradicated, the liver damage may get worse. As a consequence, other surrounding nodules in the liver could potentially transform into cancer again. For the reason, liver transplantation is considered for patients who meet a specific transplant criteria. Although transplant criteria vary across centers, many centers use the Milan criteria, which allow for transplantation in patients up to three tumors, provided the combined tumor size doesn't exceed 5 cm. If there are multiple tumors in the liver, or if the cancer has spread to other organs, such as the lungs or the bones, making local therapies alone with embolization, ablation, or radiation insufficient, medication treatment must be considered. There are two main backbones of medications for liver cancer. The first is called immunotherapy, which utilizes patient's own immune system. And the second main backbone includes medications that target extra blood vessels that cancer cells created in the tumors, so the cancer cells can get more oxygen and nutrition, so the cancer cells can grow faster. Commonly used first-line medications include a medication called atezolizumab, an anti-PD-L1 immunotherapy drug, combined with bevacizumab, which targets extra blood vessels in the tumor, simply A plus B combination. Another combination immunotherapy with durvalumab, an anti-PD-L1 immunotherapy, plus tremelimumab, an anti-CTLA-4 immunotherapy, and other oral medications such as lenvatinib or sorafenib. A regimen combining nivolumab, an anti-PD-1 immunotherapy, with ipilimumab, an anti-CTLA-4 immunotherapy drug, has been used in the second-line setting, which means after patients have received first-line treatment. At this year's major cancer conference, ASCO, a clinical trial called the CheckMate 9DW was presented, evaluating nivolumab plus ipilimumab as a first-line treatment. This study showed promising results with a response rate of 36% and a median overall survival of 23.7 months. Although this combination has a little more associated toxicities other than other options, it has demonstrated one of the best clinical outcomes so far. Therefore, this regimen is expected to receive approval for the first-line use, and we anticipate using this regimen in our clinical practice soon. Second-line approved medications include lenvatinib, cabozantinib, regorafenib, ramucirumab, and immunotherapy agents such as pembrolizumab or nivolumab alone. The response rates for these medications in the second-line setting are modest, typically ranging between 4 to 14%. At this year's ASCO conference, a clinical trial was presented that studied a combination of an oral medication, regorafenib, with pembrolizumab, an immunotherapy medication, for patients who had received immunotherapy already. The clinical efficacy of the regorafenib and the pembrolizumab combination was also modest, with response rates between 6 and 11%, raising questions about the benefit of combining a similar immunotherapy drug with an oral medication for patients who already received immunotherapy. Active clinical trials of combination medications are actively ongoing. For example, an immunotherapy medication named tiragolumab, an anti-TIGIT antibody, is one of the immunotherapy medications, has been combined with A plus B combination. This three-drug regimen showed favorable clinical outcomes compared to two-drug combination of A plus B. Further data on this promising combination are expected to be released soon. At the same time, local therapy options such as radiation, chemoembolization, or radioembolization are being combined with medication treatments. For example, in a study named NRG-1112, patients with advanced liver cancer were randomized to receive either sorafenib, an oral medication, alone, or a combination of sorafenib and radiation therapy together. The results show that overall survival was longer in patients who received both sorafenib medication and radiation together, compared to those who received sorafenib medication alone. Earlier this year, a study called EMERALD-1 showed potential clinical benefits from combining durvalumab and bevacizumab medications with chemoembolization. The study showed combination therapy had a better progression-free survival compared to chemoembolization alone. Similar clinical trials are ongoing, and because long-term data is needed to confirm these findings. Unlike other types of cancer, such as pancreatic or colon cancer, there are no established guidelines for using medications before surgery, which is called neoadjuvant therapy, or after surgery, which is called adjuvant therapy, for liver cancer for the purpose of decreasing a chance of cancer coming back. But recent studies showed promising results. A study conducted at MD Anderson Cancer Center demonstrated favorable outcomes with the use of immunotherapy called nivolumab, with and without ipilimumab, another immunotherapy medication, before surgery. Currently, a neoadjuvant trial of A plus B combination and another study of nivolumab and ipilimumab, immunotherapy drugs, are active. Another study indicated a potential clinical benefit from using A plus B after surgery to decrease the chance of cancer recurrence. While these results are encouraging, the data are not yet mature, and further studies are necessary to confirm these findings and establish definitive guidelines for these patients. Promising data suggests that combination of medications and local therapy may offer greater clinical benefits than medication alone or local therapy alone. Various medications, including immunotherapies targeting so-called PD-1, PD-L1, CTLA-4, and TIGIT, as well as other oral medications, have been tested. A current trend is to develop drugs targeting new cancer pathways. There are multiple, but for example, an ongoing clinical trial targets a cancer-specific pathway called STAT3, S-T-A-T-3, with a medication called TTI-101. Promising approaches in liver cancer treatment, including targeting a surface molecule expressed on the surface of cancer cells called the glypican-3. Medications that bind to glypican-3 can be conjugated with other drugs. So once they bind to glypican-3, they use this molecule as an entry point to attach to and attack cancer cells. These therapies are called antibody-drug conjugates, or we simply say ADCs. Sometimes these conjugates include radioactive materials or are also used in CAR T cell. So there are various cell therapy options, and clinical trials are ongoing for the treatment of liver cancer at this point. Thank you very much for your attention.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Lee. That was a really superb presentation, stellar. And actually, you're the first speaker, and you really set the stage for today's program with giving people a lot of information about some of the new treatments that have been are available now, that are being looked at, and that offer some really promise for people. So I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. James Harding, and Dr. Harding is an assistant attending gastrointestinal oncology service, early drug development service, Department of Medicine, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, assistant professor of medicine, Weill Cornell Medical College. And Dr. Harding will be addressing controlling symptoms, treatment side effects, discomfort, neuropathy, and pain, how research increases your treatment options, guidelines to prepare for telehealth telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepared list of questions, follow-up appointments, quality of life concerns, and discussion of open notes. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Harding.
Thank you so much to you and Cancer Care for the kind invitation to speak today, as well as my speakers and colleagues. It's always great to speak with this group. So I'll take over now, and I'll go slightly out of order, and I'll just finish up on clinical trials and expansion of potential treatment options. So when we think about clinical trials, we can generally bucket into two separate buckets. One is a non-therapeutic clinical trial. The other is a therapeutic clinical trial. A non-therapeutic clinical trial is when researchers are trying to gain information about a disease state, and this might include understanding how patients think about their underlying medical illness, or maybe how does the disease work in the human body, where samples might be taken from blood or tumor to understand the disease process, so otherwise known as biospecimen protocols. So at any major academic center, there's always the ability to participate in a non-therapeutic study, and often investigators might approach patients with liver cancer for consideration of these opportunities. The benefit is not necessarily to an individual person, but to the field in general, and I think it's reasonable to always consider. A therapeutic clinical trial can be broken down into three different types. A phase one clinical trial where we're trying to understand the safety and tolerability of a particular new drug or new drug combination for cancer. A phase two study might be once this has already been established, we now want to understand how active it is in the specific population. And a phase three is a study that seeks to compare the new therapy, which has gone through phase one and two testing, and now compare it to the standard of care. Colleague Dr. Lee had mentioned there are several new immunotherapy combinations for the frontline treatment of patients with advanced, unresectable, or metastatic HCC. An example of a phase three might be comparing atezolizumab and bevacizumab to another combination. So in these phase threes, randomization usually occurs. In the phase one, this is where we're looking for the first time the safety, efficacy, and understanding of the potential. Right now across the country for liver cancer, there are many phase 1-2 studies that are going on at centers of academic excellence. There are several ongoing phase 3s in the frontline setting, and importantly, many of these are moving to earlier stages of disease. And although these are considered investigational, clinical trials are means by which patients may gain access to newer medications that have had at least evidence that they can be taken into the clinic. And so this is something you could speak with your primary doctor or medical oncologist about. Pivoting away from clinical trials and the treatment of HCC, anytime treatment is delivered, there is always the potential for side effects. What our goal in medical oncology is really to control the symptoms of the disease, control the disease and lengthen life, and when possible, cure patients. But all things may come with potential side effects. The main classes of drugs that we use for the treatment of HCC are immunotherapies and antivascular therapies, such as tyrosine kinase inhibitors or antibodies to vascular growth factors. And the side effects of immunotherapy are really waking up the immune system against other parts of the body. And this is well documented and well understood over about a decade of studying these drugs. The drugs, the immunotherapies are generally quite safe, but we must always watch for these. These could include rashes, liver dysfunction, diarrhea, joint pain, itch, damage to the endocrine organs such as the thyroid and other endocrine organs in the body. Your medical oncologist and hepatologist that manage these are well versed in it. The key factor is if you notice something new in treatment, you should bring it to your medical doctor's attention. And there are treatments for all of these things, and sometimes they do require suppression of an immune response with the use of steroids or other targeted immunosuppressive agents. The other class that I mentioned was tyrosine kinase inhibitors and antivascular. These drugs tend to cause a class effect of raising blood pressure, may cause easy bleeding, or in some instances bleeding, may also cause a variety of gastrointestinal side effects and skin side effects. The key here is really watching blood pressure and monitoring those treatments, working closely with your medical oncologist, hepatologist, and if needed, cardiologists to manage vascular complications of this therapy. When giving certain drugs like bevacizumab, there may be an increased risk of bleeding, and we work closely with our hepatology colleagues to assure that patients with liver cancer do not have varices or any evidence of bleeding, and we would deal with that prior to the institution of those therapies. But the key takeaway is always, if you're on an active treatment, just know the potential side effects and work closely with your doctor and team if anything should come up while on treatment. Moving to telemedicine. Telemedicine is now an accepted way to deliver care after a COVID pandemic. I think it's really important to align with your treating provider on the use of telemedicine. For example, in some instances, I think it's entirely acceptable telemedicine, for potential distant consults or for routine follow-up. However, other times the physical examination may be of critical importance to understanding what is going on. It's important if, using telemed, do so with the understanding that, the provider may want to see you in person and really conduct an exam to fully understand what's going on. If you're doing telemed, it's great if you have an IT background,
so that you know how to do it. It's always challenging, and if you don't have an issue with that, you can always contact your provider to help and assist. And then I think in follow-up, in terms of kind of other things related to telemedicine, you mentioned open notes. So in our current age, everyone has access to their medical record, and sometimes even in real time, including the notes, the images, the reports, etc. The overarching goal of this is to enhance transparency, which we all feel is of critical importance and we support. When you're reviewing your notes, please be sure to bring any questions to your provider. Sometimes these are written in a medical way, and it's not clearly evident what is being said. You may always ask your provider about that. Also know that when you review scan reports prior to seeing your doctor, you may have findings there that may produce anxiety or be uncertain. Make sure you speak with your medical oncologist in advance about how you want to look at that information. And for some patients, for example, I say wait until you see me to go over imaging. But that's always an ongoing discussion. I think the last point that I want to cover here is that the care of patients with cancer is not only complex, but it may be expensive. This it really has to do with reimbursement for medications through insurance, as well as reimbursement for procedures and or visits. Most major centers have a financial office that can help assure your insurance plan works with your particular medical oncologist. These institutions will often do a pre-authorization for some of the many medicines that we have previously talked about. It's important to understand that there are additional programs for some of these medications by the manufacturer of the drug that may be able to further reduce costs, and we who treat these diseases are well aware of those, and that may require some additional forms. It's also important to understand that there is philanthropic support for those patients that are in need. I guess the punchline is that financial toxicity is real, and it's reasonable to discuss that with your medical doctor or medical oncologist. You should not let that be a barrier to getting adequate care, and in many ways there are workarounds should providers know if there is a specific issue. So I thank you so much for the time and attention today.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Harding. Very informative and lots of information for people, and I'm sure there'll be lots of questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Ms. Diana Bearden, and Ms. Bearden is an oncology dietitian at the Michael E. DeBakey VA Medical Center, and she'll be addressing nutrition and hydration concerns for people living with liver cancer. It's my pleasure to bring on my esteemed colleague, Ms. Bearden.
Thank you so much, Carolyn. I'm excited to be part of today's presentation. Nutrition and hydration are essential in the tolerance to treatment and your quality of life. During your journey, your diet might be modified based on your unique needs. Some potential side effects you may experience are things like a decreased appetite. You may experience indigestion or reflux, or the feeling of feeling full quickly, maybe even nausea, constipation, diarrhea, vomiting, and weight loss. But a dietitian is part of your healthcare team, and she can support you in meeting your calorie, protein, and fluid goals. They can also help on diet modification. Typically, there's an increased need for protein in the presence of liver cancer. Each person responds a little differently to treatment, and so side effect management is also something the dietitian can help you with related to your diet. Communicating your challenges sooner rather than later will help us help you more quickly. In general, you want to avoid weight loss. It's important that this is something that you communicate with your healthcare team if you notice some changes in your weight that are unintentional. This is something you want to talk about with them. And the reason for this is when we lose weight during cancer treatment, we usually lose muscle more than we lose fat. It'll increase your risk of falls, delay potentially in wound healing, and even potentially push off treatment if there are some significant issues with that. Even if you're overweight, you can become malnourished. So this is important across the board. There are medications to help with side effects, but talk with your healthcare team about those symptoms as they arise so they can help you sooner rather than later. Hydration is something we often leave off the table, and it's because we're so focused on the nutrition aspect that hydration sometimes just gets forgotten in the conversation. But fluid needs are very, very important, and most people need between 8 and 10 8-ounce glasses per day. Things that are hydrating are water, milk, sports drinks, juice. When you're dehydrated, it can actually amplify your side effects such as nausea and fatigue, even making you feel dizzy. So talking with your healthcare team is so important. In closing, there are several members of your healthcare team, and we're all here to support you. Please reach out to us as soon as possible. Thank you so much, and I'll hand the line back over to Carolyn.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Burden. That was just a wonderful presentation. Lots of information for our participants to really think about and to utilize. So thank you so much. And our next speaker is Ms. Cassie Spector. And Ms. Spector is an oncology social worker with Cancer Care. And she'll be addressing communicating with the healthcare team about your financial concerns. She'll go over with you Cancer Care's free programs and services and also let you know how to contact Cancer Care with our Hope Line and website. So it's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Spector.
Thank you, Dr. Mesner. My name is Cassie, and I'm an oncology social worker at Cancer Care. Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization providing free professional support services and information to help people manage the emotional, practical, and financial challenges of cancer. Our comprehensive services include resource navigation, counseling, support groups, educational workshops, community programs, publications, and limited financial assistance. There are many aspects of a liver cancer diagnosis that may be addressed throughout psychosocial supportive services, making informed treatment decisions, quality of life concerns, and communication with one's medical team are important topics that can be discussed with the oncology social worker. A cancer diagnosis can be very overwhelming, and additional support and guidance, as well as establishing a supportive network, may help relieve feelings of anxiety related to one's diagnosis. It can be helpful to determine ways to approach these challenges that may surface. By calling Cancer Care's Hope Line, one of our oncology social workers can help navigate ways to seek support services. On Cancer Care's website, there is a wide array of reading material and information related to liver cancer. This includes publications about communication with your medical team, coping with a cancer diagnosis, as well as stories of help and hope through Cancer Care's podcast, Cancer Out Loud. Upcoming and recorded Connect education workshops like this workshop today can be found on cancercare.org/connect, including several workshops specific to liver cancer. People diagnosed with liver cancer may experience practical and financial concerns throughout one's treatment. Unfortunately, financial concerns may be a source of continuing stress. When diagnosed and throughout treatment, it can be helpful to discuss any financial or practical concern with your medical providers. Often people are uncomfortable talking to their healthcare team about financial concerns and practical needs. As Dr. Harding mentioned, your healthcare team is very accustomed to these conversations and can help ensure that you have access to the treatments that you need. It may also be helpful to connect with a social worker or patient navigator, as well as the financial department at the treatment center to see if there's any financial options available. A question that you can initially ask your medical team is, who can I talk to about financial assistance? Or you can even ask, how much will this treatment cost? Your healthcare team can help provide support with day-to-day concerns so you have the best quality of life during your treatment. Some of these practical concerns include your healthcare team, that your healthcare team can help with includes transportation to get to and from your treatment or finding financial help with medications or household expenses. Additionally, please know if you're encountering any financial hardships, there's organizations there to help you. Cancer Care offers resource navigation services. nationally in English and in Spanish to patients who are in treatment and post-treatment, as well as caregivers affected by cancer. We offer short-term strengths-based approach to resource navigation, where the social worker or resource navigator will work with the client in connecting them to resources, referrals, and financial assistance. Additionally, to find local organizations that can help, you can visit cancercare.org/helpinghand. This guide allows you to search by zip code and diagnosis to find national and local organizations and what they can assist with. If you're interested in learning more about cancer care services, I encourage you to call Cancer Care's National Hope Line at 800-813-4673 to speak with one of our oncology social workers, or you can visit our website at cancercare.org. It's been such a pleasure to be part of this program. Thank you so much for your attention and the opportunity to speak today. I'll now turn it back to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Spector. That was really outstanding. Just a wonderful, wonderful presentation. And I know there'll be lots of questions for you during the Q&A as well. Thank you. Thank you so much. And now we're going to go right on to the Q&A, and I'm going to ask Regina how to explain to all of you how to queue up and ask questions.
Thank you. At this time, we will begin the question and answer session. We will take questions from the web only, and you can submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
So the question for Dr. Lee, what is the factor to choose TACE, T-A-C-E, or TAR, T-A-R-E? I had TAR before resection, however, most recently, had TACE, T-A-C-E, for my recurrence. I was told by IR team that TACE leaves ability to go back in later.
Yeah, that's a great question. There are a lot of different sources of data or conflicting data. You know, basically TACE, the T-A-C is a trans arterial, which means through the blood vessel. C, chemo, E, embolization. And the TARE, T-A-R-E, the trans-arterial radio, and E, embolization. So first one is TACE, and second one is basically radio embolization. There are a lot of data discussing pros and cons. For example, in general, it is not so if you speak with the different providers, specific interventional radiologists, they may not agree. But they are considered similar in terms of efficacy. But in terms of achieving better cancer response and prolonged response, nowadays Y90 radio embolization is considered a little better in terms of efficacy and then progression-free survival, which means how long the medication is going to be effective. At the same time, because a lot of quite oftentimes we also consider surgery, and we do chemo embolization first or radio embolization first, and then we do like a surgery and other things. But I got quite a number of questions and queries from our surgeons or transplant surgeons when we get. Radio embolization first. Radiation tends to cause a little more scar tissues, so they can potentially cause more scarring and surgery complications. But other than that, they are considered similar, and Asian countries and other countries outside the United States and Canada prefers chemo embolization, but in the United States we do radio embolization. But there are multiple. Potential clinical scenarios where chemo embolization is preferred or radio embolization is preferred. It's a long discussion. And it all depends on, like I mentioned, size, distribution, number of tumors, and location of tumors. It all depends.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That's a great answer to that question. Thank you so much. And the next question is for Dr. Harding. How does treatment differ depending on where the cancer forms in the bile ducts inside the liver, outside the liver?
Thank you for that question. So when liver cancer has spread outside of the liver, that implies that it has metastasized, it has left its primary organ and has spread throughout the body. Often when the cancer has metastasized and is outside of the liver, we usually think about using medicinal therapy or systemic therapy first. And so generally patients with spread or extrahepatic liver cancer may be treated with some of the therapies that were mentioned previously, atezolizumab and bevacizumab, durvalumab and tremelimumab, clinical trials. It really will depend on, you know, the wellness of a particular patient, their liver function, and the extent of the disease outside of the liver. There are some instances where the amount of disease outside of the liver may be small, or it's called oligometastatic disease, for example, in an isolated organ or one tumor outside of the liver. In some instances, regional therapies might be considered there, but in general, for outside of the liver, liver cancer, we favor systemic therapy. Obviously, it's a case-by-case scenario. When the disease is liver-limited, it is, as was stated previously, it depends upon the extent of the cancer, the location, where the key thing is you really need multidisciplinary care, and that is the most critical thing, a review by an expert center for multidisciplinary care to help decide whether surgery, transplant, or regional therapy would be used for the treatment of liver-limited HCC. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Harding. Thanks. For Dr. Lee, is embolization applicable only when the cancer has not spread outside the liver?
Yeah, thank you so much for the question. As Dr. Harding just mentioned, when cancer has spread and has metastasized, then our approach is to start systemic therapy first, because there are, it is considered that there are microscopic invisible cancer cells in the liver and outside the liver. And that's why we want to attack and control cancer with medications first, and then consider other options. But in certain clinical scenarios where, for example, one specific tumor in the liver, also in patients having tumors outside the liver, but one specific tumor in the liver is located in a dangerous location. For example, right next to essential blood vessels. And then if you leave this specific tumor alone, then it can cause complications in the liver, right? Expediting liver failure. Then we do consider radioembolization first, or while the patient is getting systemic medication treatment. Or sometimes we also do, external beam radiation decrease the chance of liver complications to continue our journey of fighting cancer. And then also, as I mentioned during my presentation today, there are some data, once again, the data has to be verified in large clinical trials and other studies. But some studies suggest that there may be some synergy when medications are combined with radioembolization or radiation therapy. And although in reality, it's quite difficult to see this, actually, it is called the abscopal effect, which means when the cancer cells are released, cancer cell debris are released quickly after destruction by Y90 or radiation, then immune system sees more cancer debris. So when they receive immunotherapy, the immune system is activated better. So there is a theoretic benefit and synergy when medications are combined with a Y90 radioembolization, a chemoembolization, or radiation. So once again, as Dr. Harding mentioned, it is important to get a certain case assessed at a large cancer center in a multidisciplinary approach.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Thank you. So this one for Dr. parting, can treatment options like embolization and ablation be used together to treat liver cancer?
Yeah. The question is related to multimodality treatment of liver cancer. And the answer is that in, yes, select instances, more than one modality may be used to treat liver cancer, whether it may be liver-limited or even extrahepatic. These cases really do, though, it's not sort of a blanket type statement. It really requires sort of a multidisciplinary review and the unique clinical circumstances of a patient. So, you know, as an example, somebody with liver cancer that has spread may be on immunotherapy, and one of the lesions that has spread could be in the bone and it could be painful, and you might do radiation with immunotherapy. Another situation could be liver-limited disease where a combination of embolization and ablation are done. It really, though, requires, you know, the subspecialty care and the multidisciplinary care. So I hope that answers the question. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And a question for Dr. Lee. Can non-cancerous liver tumors become cancerous?
Yeah. So, for example, I mean, there are multiple non-cancerous tumors in the liver. So, for example, there is a tumor called the hepatic adenoma. The hepatic adenoma usually happens in young people, and yeah. So, for sure, non-cancerous tumors, which is considered benign, can transform into cancer later down the road. So theoretically, some tumors do have a potential of malignant transformation. Some other tumors don't. I hope that it helps. It answered your question. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And is there a way to monitor this, or just to?
It all depends. For example, there's a primary benign liver tumor called the PNH, and another tumor called the hepatic adenoma. And, you know, so obviously someone has to follow this. For example, at MD Anderson, our hepatobiliary surgeons follow these lesions and benign tumors, making sure that they are not becoming malignant. But you know, because as we follow these patients, we used to follow these tumors with an MRI imaging, say once every 6 months or so. Later, like 5 years 5 years later, we have gone we review the previous medical history and multiple MRI images, and these tumors are not really growing, right? Then we can potentially prolong the interval of following these patients, for example. So, we do have to follow a certain tumors, especially hepatic adenoma, because there's a small chance of malignant transformation.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And for Dr. Harding, if a patient with liver cirrhosis develops hepatocellular carcinoma, how does that impact treatment options? Is surgery still an option for patients with cirrhosis?
Great question, and it always goes down to sort of a multidisciplinary review at a center that's experienced in doing both, you know, doing surgery and even transplant. And so it really depends on the extent and size of the tumor, as well as the degree of the cirrhosis and the functional liver. And so in many patients with HCC that have underlying cirrhosis, the cirrhosis is usually too severe to do a liver resection. And in patients that have smaller volume of HCC, the preferred treatment is liver transplant. There's a literature for resecting patients with liver cancer that has developed in the context of a risk factor where, you know, there's not really significant cirrhosis as long as certain parameters are met. But at the end of the day, the clear answer, though, is multidisciplinary care at sort of a high-volume liver resection center or center of excellence for liver cancer to determine whether surgery or transplant should be considered as a part of the care.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And the last question from Dr. Lee, is there a high likelihood of small nodules becoming cancerous when there is a current malignant tumor?
So the question is, if there are liver sources nodules in the liver and it can transform into cancer?
So is there a high likelihood of small nodules becoming cancerous when there is a current malignant tumor? So the malignant tumor...
It's always hard to know.
Yeah, it's always hard to know, right?
I think one of the questions where it's hard to know exactly what that, you know, what that implies, right?
Okay, thank you.
But once again, that's why, in the beginning of my presentation, I mentioned that, liver sources can potentially, is a medical term, basically liver damage, and liver damage was done. And so that's why we need to decrease risk factors, right? There's a reason for having liver cirrhosis, metabolic syndrome, hepatitis B or C viruses, and also alcohol abuse. So if a patient has a certain risk factor, then they have a risk, patients always have a risk of developing liver cancer. These nodules can turn into cancer. So we want to try our best to minimize and decrease these risk factors to prevent liver cancer.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And I'm going to ask our speakers to provide takeaways from today's program. I'm going to start with Dr. Lee, and then Dr. Harding, and then Ms. Spector. So we'll start with Dr. Lee. Just a minute or minute and a half takeaway that you'd like people to take away from today's program.
Yeah, thank you so much for the invitation. And it was my honor to have such a great conversation and talk today. I think we need to have, I want to say, more and more programs like this for our patients, especially our patients are, desperate, right? So we need to get more and more information. So that way we can have a better cancer treatment. And thank you so much for your invitation. And once again, Dr. Harding and I myself mentioned that liver cancer treatment requires multidisciplinary conversations. It's very complicated. So we need to consider treating liver cancer at a major center where multi-D approach is possible. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lee. And Dr. Harding?
Thank you again for the kind invitation and the attention over this hour session. I think my main takeaway is that, over the last 10 years, there's been great improvement in the treatment of liver cancer with the advent of immunotherapy and immunotherapy combinations. We're seeing a movement of that therapy to earlier stages of disease. We're also seeing advances in regional type therapies. And so my hope is that, over the next 10 years, we'll continue to see such advances and that through these yearly interactions, we can provide useful updates to you. Again, thank you for your attention and time today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Harding. Thank you so much. And Ms. Spector.
Thank you so much, and thank you all for your attention, and I'm glad to be part of this program. And I would say my takeaway is really just to know that you're not alone. Know there's support groups, there's support services, peer matching, and financial support available. So reach out to those on your treatment team that you feel comfortable to find out what support services or financial support is available to. Find out who that point person can be with your treatment team. And then know that there's organizations like Cancer Care available that you can reach out to seek support services or financial assistance. So thank you again for your attention. I'm glad I was part of this program.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Spector. And all the information that we gave out today, like you're all going to get a SurveyMonkey evaluation of this program within a week of the program. But in that evaluation, there will also be resources that we mentioned. So you will be getting the resources for the Cancer Care Hope Line, our website, and other resources as well. So although it's an evaluation of the program, which we hope to complete, you will also be getting resources. So even if you're writing down the numbers and everything, you'll have them, the numbers, the website, and everything that you need. Again, I want to thank all of our speakers. First of all, they've been really phenomenal. I want to thank all of our participants for asking such really great questions. These are really phenomenal questions and phenomenal speakers. We have a really great program. Although we've done this program today, I would say it was probably one of the best programs we've done on liver cancer updates, and we'll probably do more of them. So stay tuned. But I do want to comment, because there were so many of you on the call today, we couldn't take all your questions. So for those of you who either asked a question, have a question in queue, or are thinking of a question, please go back to your treating healthcare team. You've learned a lot from being on the program today, and we hope that you'll actually take that information back to your healthcare team and ask your question of your healthcare team, and ask your question over and over again until you get the answer that you need. That's really very important to do. Also be sure that you know how to reach your healthcare team weekends, evenings, and holidays. It seems like those are the times, and I guess summertime too, because sometimes people are away or take vacation, and you need to know who's on call, who you can contact if you need to speak to someone on your treating healthcare team. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone have a great day.